Tuesday, March 3rd to order. We could get a roll call, please.
Commissioner Keen?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
And Chair George?
Here. And if we could stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So before we begin with agenda review, I see there are some members in the audience. If any of you plan on speaking tonight, it would be really helpful if you could fill out a speaker slip in the back and hand it to Debbie. That would be fantastic. So agenda review. Does the commission have any items they wish to move? Okay, so we'll move on to community comments. This is a portion of the meeting where we invite members of the community to come and discuss items not on the agenda. Do we have anyone here who wishes to speak? Okay, so I'll close that community comments portion and move to written communications. So do we have any written communications this evening?
None this evening.
So we'll move on to the consent agenda, the approval of minutes for February 17th, 2015. Commissioners, do we have any comments or changes?
No.
No? Get a motion to approve the minutes?
I move the adoption of the minutes of Tuesday, February 17th meeting as submitted.
Can we get a voice vote for that, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so we'll move on to public hearings. Tonight we'll discuss the continued consideration of amendment conditional use permit 15001, lot merger 15-001, and variance 15-001. The location is 880 Oak Park Boulevard, and the applicant is Russ Chappelle. Staff, can we please have a report?
Thank you, Chair George, members of the commission. As you mentioned, this is item 8A, continued consideration of the three permits that you just listed. This meeting is the public hearings continued from the February 17th meeting. A little bit about the project location itself. As you can see, the project location is highlighted in yellow. It's zoned office mixed use, and it's an integral part of the previous plan development, which does require City Council approval. Surrounding land uses include medical offices, a fitness center, a hotel, a church, residential development across Meadow Creek itself, and Oak Park Boulevard and Pismo Beach developments. The property currently has an entitlement that was approved by the City Council on January 28th of last year. It included a conditional use permit, a variance, and a vesting tentative tract map for a 69-bed care facility, 8 townhomes, a creek setback of 35 feet, and a 37-foot care facility building height. At that time, it was also identified that there were parking easement and access easement issues with the neighboring property owner, Casa Grande Inn. And at that time, the council was aware that the project would either need to be modified and come back, or the two parties would need to work things out amongst themselves. And as you can see, the project has been revised. So here's the previously approved site plan. Again, it included the 69-bed care facility down on the western portion of the site adjacent to Meadow Creek, the 8 townhomes in the current, what I refer to as the dirt lot, the unpaved dirt area, and various driveway access points, improved parking places. It also included some directional signage to help people navigate through a the two driveways at that time, the upper was proposed to be ingress and egress, while the lower was ingress only. The current proposal will take the 8 townhomes and turn that into 16 independent living units. It will also, rather than having the driveways leading into the townhomes, this portion of the site will be developed with 18 parking spaces to be shared with Casa Grande Inn. The care facility itself becomes more rectangular and does not have such an extended portico share with the previous plan had a residence or two above the portico share. Now everything's being pulled back. Parking still being developed adjacent to the care facility. Parking on this far southern end of the site is reduced. The numbers are down. But again, it's more parking elsewhere. The other piece, obviously, is the creek setback variance. So they were previously approved with a 35-foot setback. The setback for Meadow Creek is 50 feet, and the applicant's coming in and requesting a 32-foot setback at the narrowest point, at the closest point. Much of it is beyond the 32-foot setback mark, but the project site itself is 1.8 acres. It's located in the Oak Park Professional Plaza. The plaza is part of a master plan that has been amended numerous times throughout the years. Again, it's entitled with the 55,000 square foot, 69 bed care facility, 8 townhomes, and 35 foot setback. The proposed project, the proposed amendment, looks something like this. Phase one is the 70 bed care facility, two stories as seen from the driveway with a subfloor basement. Three stories overall. Total height was originally proposed to be 39 feet. The Architectural Review Committee recommended that the a condition of approval be placed on the project, requiring it to comply with the 37-foot height limit as previously approved. The applicants have said that they can meet that by changing roof pitches and that sort of thing. Here's a look at the backside of the care facility with the pedestrian pathway, wrought iron gate, and riparian revegetation and gardens and walking spaces. And here's a look at the care facility from the opposite end. So as I mentioned, the building has become more uniform in the rectangular aspect. Some readjusting of rooms and walls allowed for this portion to be basically filled in, so it's a uniform height instead of dropping down as the previous project would have. Phase two, again, they're getting rid of the 8 townhomes and replacing it with 16 independent living units. As you can see here, the architecture remains the same, more or less, on the independent living units. They're compatible with the care facility, but not the colors are changed to kind of show that they're tied together, but not the same building as one. And here's a backside from, again, what I refer to as the dirt lot. Architecturally, the buildings will use cement stucco siding, fiber lap siding in certain areas, use a lot of earth tones, kind of hark to that Meadow Creek riparian area, and not try and have the building stand out instead of using like a fuchsia or something like that. The base will be Eldorado stone river rock, and I do have for the entitled project color boards if you'd like to see those as well. Now, obviously, if you've been up at the site anytime recently, you know that parking can and is an issue. I've tried to outline in your staff report to the best of my ability the existing parking, how it's divvied up, what parking areas will be removed, what areas will be reconstructed, total numbers. I'd rather not delve specifically into numbers at this point unless you have questions on that, because it does get somewhat confusing when numbers start getting thrown out. But overall, the applicant is developing quite a bit of additional parking. Some of it is designated to be used solely for the Meadow Creek Care Facility use. Some of it's shared with the Casa Grande Inn, as indicated down here. A large portion of it is open, non-designated. Obviously, in a parking area like this where you see so many different uses in the parking lot, we would prefer that it all be shared. However, in 2004, there was an issue with parking whereby, long story short, the Planning Commission determined to designate some of the shared parking for particular uses. So that's how we've come to where we are today. So as you can see, currently there's 146 spaces in order to develop the project. 27 of those spaces, of the non-designated spaces, are removed. And in the end, 193 total spaces will be provided on the site. Now, as I mentioned, typically we would like to see shared parking to be open to anyone at any time. However, the previously allocated parking spaces to certain uses, and with the current proposal, the applicant is providing shared parking with the Casa Grande Inn as part of a parking easement to benefiting the Casa Grande Inn. The site is accessed from James Way. Currently, it has two points of ingress and egress on the upper and lower driveways. Although originally the applicant had intended for the upper driveway to be ingress only and the lower driveway to be ingress and egress, it's been brought to my attention that they are proposing basically to leave the two driveways as they exist today, with ingress and egress on both driveways. Staff does still have concerns regarding the two points of egress so close together, specifically with regard to conflicting turning movements, with the lower driveway people turning left and the upper driveway people turning right. There does exist the possibility of vehicle conflicts, particularly with the increased development on the site and the more intense use of the site. It should be noted that Casa Grande Inn does have vehicular access through the site. Originally, it did what we call the S-curve, came in down below and went out through the top. Through their negotiations, the applicant has developed a plan in order to allow Casa Grande Inn to exit straight through the site, which is something that they were advocating for, given that they typically have buses and large semi-truck cabs driving and staying at the hotel. So as I mentioned, with regard to the creek setback, the previous project was approved with a 35-foot creek setback. The Meadow Creek typical setback is 50 feet. Part of the reason that the 35-foot setback was approved was in light of an entitlement at 25 feet. So staff was in support of, instead of going the full 50 feet, reducing it down to 35, because in total we were gaining 10 extra feet. In order to align the driveways to where Casa Grande Inn could exit straight out, the building needed to be adjusted slightly, which does result in, at this point, the closest the building would be to the creek, top of creek bank, would be 32 feet. But as I mentioned, on the average, it's much larger than 32 feet, sometimes 30, 39, 38. So on average, it's still more than 32. With regard to landscaping, the applicant will be revegetating the entire creek riparian area with riparian vegetation, removing the ruderal non-invasive or non-native invasive species that have taken over since the site has been graded and work has been done on the remainder of the plaza. So that's what this upper image shows. The lower image is part of the creek restoration plan that's anticipated under the mitigated negative declaration. I will say that even though this is taken from a previous site plan, the revegetation is the portion to focus on, in that even down in the creek area itself, they'll be pulling out invasive species and replanting with native riparian vegetation. Additionally, the applicant will be landscaping up by the independent living facility as well, including numerous trees. And with regard to advisory committee reviews, the staff advisory committee did review the project in January, and the members of the SAC were in support of the amended project. The architectural review committee did review the project on February 2nd. They were also in support of the project and recommended project approval. However, they also, again, had the condition regarding the building maintaining the 37-foot height as indicated previously. So I briefly mentioned the mitigated negative declaration that was previously developed for the entitled project that was adopted by the City Council when that project was approved. With the amended project, staff did prepare an addendum to the mitigated negative declaration, given that no new significant impacts nor mitigation measures are required for the change of project. With regard to public notice, public hearing notice was mailed to all property owners within 500 feet of the site. Typically, per state law, only 300 feet is required. Staff requested 500 feet, given that it backs up to Meadow Creek, and we wanted to get some of the residents on the far side of Meadow Creek. That was sent out on February 6th and was also posted on the city's website and published in the Tribune. The February 17th meeting, as I mentioned, was continued to a date certain of tonight. And tonight's agenda and staff report were posted online and at City Hall on Friday the 27th. As you might recall, prior to the previous meeting, staff received a letter from the Casa Grande Inn objecting to the project due to conflicts with easements. However, since that meeting, the parties have come to an agreement. The Casa Grande Inn is no longer opposing the project as it's proposed. If any significant changes result through the approval process, the two parties would need to meet and come to another agreement on the new site plan. That basically covers staff's presentation. At this time, it's recommended that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution prepared for you this evening, recommending the City Council approve the project. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much, Matt. So we'll start with commission comments, questions for staff. Commissioner Mack, do you have questions for staff?
A couple questions. The first is one of the reasons why we continued this is because the letter from the attorney, and staff's satisfied with the new letter that we received that they've come to agreement.
Correct. Staff is also, with the agreement came basically a settlement agreement. Staff did review that as well, and we are satisfied with it.
Even though there's like a timeline of 90 days in there? We're
correct.
That works. When looking at the addendum package, does this replace the original site plan that was in here, or only components of it will be substituted? And what I'm getting at is specifically, I'll say the parking to be removed exhibit A1.5. It appears that driveway number 2 was being demoed and moved. Isn't it going to stay in the same place?
In order to accommodate the realignment, and it is actually, there's a row of parking right here below this blue row of parking. So the driveway is being shifted up slightly. So that's consistent with the previous plans. The difference, as you'll note on sheet A1.6, if you take a look at the upper driveway, they're now proposing to maintain the ingress and egress on the upper driveway as well. So that's the change between.
And I noticed they moved the trash too. To the motel site, the trash container that was in that triangle.
You are correct. I didn't catch that on my review, but you are correct.
So the question I have, just to reiterate one more time, the reason why we're moving that driveway alignment.
Moving the driveway alignment in order to help the vehicle exiting from Casa Grande Inn, maintaining the portions of the existing access easements, as well as accommodating the new parking adjacent to the building rather than having it separated by the driveway.
Is that something that the applicant was wanting to do or something that staff was directing to do?
Something the applicant was proposing.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Vice Chair Keane, do you have
no,
a question?
No, this time.
Okay. Commissioner Martin?
Thank you. I do have just one question. On James Way, in the middle of that street, is that an identified or, you know, painted out or striped left turn, ingress, egress, middle lane, kind of what I kind of have called a suicide lane in the past? Because if people are coming out from either one of those and turning left, will they have the opportunity to go into that middle lane and then transition into that westbound traffic on James Way?
It is painted at this time. The upper driveway, however, turning left, there's not much room in the quote-unquote suicide lane. Obviously, it tapers off pretty quickly as you approach the intersection, but it is painted.
Okay. I just wanted to – so it's already identified as kind of a left turn
correct.
Ingress, egress, access lane in the street. Thanks.
No comments.
I just have one question. The change in height – by my paperwork – is it just a 7-inch change? Because I read it was 39, but then I also read it was 37.7, and the ARC is recommending to keep it at 37. So are we just looking at a 7-inch difference?
Correct.
Okay.
The applicant has returned since the ARC meeting, basically saying they no longer need 39 and that they can comply.
So complying at 37.7.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so those are my questions. No one else has questions, so we'll open it to the applicant, if you'd like to come up and speak.
Hi, I'm Russ Chappelle. I'm the applicant, and I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be here for a number of reasons. It's been a little bit over a year. A year ago, we did get an entitlement, the one that was previously referred to, and I'm happy because I feel like I'm coming here with a stronger, better project. As a matter of fact, I know I'm coming here with a stronger, better project. Partly because the comments that we had at the time from the Planning Commission as well as the City Council, the only objection that everybody recognizes the need in the community for assisted living, particularly memory care in South County in general as well as Arroyo Grande specifically, there are no memory beds whatsoever. And memory care is the largest contingent of growing number of people needing that type of care. So for us not to have that, this is a very high community need. So I'm happy to be coming with that. Of course, I was here a year ago with that. But the modification of changing it from two-bedroom, two-bath condos in the middle of the entire project as opposed to something that much more conforms to that which is needed, which is independent living for people who are slightly higher functioning, I think is a very strong thing. In addition to the fact that we have both neighbors, both Kevin Kennedy as well as Ray Bunnell of Casa Grande, with written endorsement of the project as it stands. So for all those reasons, I'm happy to be here with a project that stands much stronger than it did a year ago with the approval. I'll be here for questions. There's many things that we could talk about. This is, I'll just very quickly mention historically, and I want to thank you for each of you speaking and or meeting with me over this. My first entitlement on this property, on these three parcels, was in 2003. It was a 25,000 square foot medical building, and unfortunately that project was lost to Pismo Beach across the way. The opportunity was lost and never got built. In 2006, Rob Strong had come to me, the city planning director at the time, and said, you know, residential's hot. Why don't you let me help you design a mixed-use residential project, and we'll put that on here. And that was the entitlement that was being referred to a moment ago by Matt that had the 25-foot setback from the creek. And once again, the economy changed. And fortunately, I didn't build it in that way. And here we are now for the what I hope to be final time, because I really would love to build something. I've been in this a decade now, and and it's time to build something that the community really needs. So I hope with your approval to do that. I'm here for questions. I'll just sit down and keep it short and sweet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I question?
Yeah. So, well, Mr. Chappelle, did you want to just stay up here? I think the commissioners had questions for you.
easy ones.
So we'll start with Vice Chair Keene.
I noticed that we're doing a lot line adjustment for making the three lots into one. And I was wondering, I know why you're doing, why we have to do the one, because the building crosses it. But it looks like keeping the other one separate, I don't know what ramification it would be, would eventually give you opportunity to sell that if we weren't merging all three lots right now. That's just a question of why you're thinking that way.
Well, I really thought that I knew everything about this project inside and out and every square inch, but quite frankly, I thought that we were just merging the two lowers. So I'm perfectly, unless there's a good reason that I'm not aware of, I'm perfectly fine keeping the two separate lots, because we do plan on phasing these strictly from a parking standpoint. We want to do those things that would be least impactful to the site. This use of assisted living is the lowest parking stress on a site, and this site, as you are already aware, has its own parking challenges. I might mention that the only parcel of the map, can you show the, yeah, there we go. The only parcel that's developed that I own is the upper right red one, the smallest building on site. So all of the traffic on the site, unfortunately, is really not controlled by me. I participate in the sense that I own that upper red building, but the beige one to the left, which is a medical building, and the blue one below it, which is the health club, are the main traffic generators on the site. So this project, as we're coming back with it right now, has more parking. Is there a reason why we have some reason that I don't know about?
I do not believe that we need to abandon the lot line separating the independent living units from the assisted living. The only thing is it is currently being serviced.
You need to get up here.
Could you come up and your name? And
my name is Randy Alonzo, and I'm the project manager for this project. And I live at 381 Rio Road here in Arroyo Grande on the Mesa. And I'm coordinating the consultants to improve this project from the current approvals that we have. But as far as this parcel under the independent living units, I do not believe that it's necessary that we abandon that parcel, because it would have the ability to be sold independently, but that wasn't the original intention. So if it doesn't affect...
I just wonder if there was a reason for
it. Yeah.
Staff's intake okay. Comment on that.
Okay.
It was previously relayed to staff that the reason that lot was also being merged was due to design issues of the independent facility being adjacent to the property line, such as open windows and that sort of thing. If that has changed, that's news to staff.
Thank you.
Okay. Were there any other questions for Russ?
I have one on the redo of the exhibit for the driveway alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason why you chose to do that?
Yes.
As opposed to leave the driveway where it currently is today?
Yeah, good question. If we keep the – let me use the laser pointer. Turn it on. Well, I managed to do that. Okay. There we go. Okay. Whoops, that's the prior thing. There we go. Okay, so that's not the one that we want. That's the one we want. So I think you're asking about this parking and the throat of this entrance and exit right here?
That's correct. It looks like it moved to the north.
It moved upward slightly, yes. Because if it does not move upward slightly, then we don't have room for this row of parking. The only alternative would be to take this entire row of parking and place it up against the property line here. If we did, then we won't get agreement from the next door neighbor here, who wants a straight pass through, and it would once again come kind of in a snake pattern through here. I mean, it would still go exiting to James Way, but we are fortunately at that point of agreement with our neighbors, and this is part of the reason why. So what we had to do is place the parking adjacent to the building, which in the case of assisted living is a benefit. These are people who oftentimes are in walkers and so forth. So having that parking next to the building is an advantage.
It seems to be a subtle change, but I mean, it'd save you a great deal not to redo that drive approach and just leave it where it's at. And the same token, I do like moving the trash and not having it right off James Way. It's complicated for the trash trucks blocking a drive entrance. So I do like the relocation of the trash. However, what we lost is the ability to screen that wall. There is landscaping all along the two elevation differences of the parking areas.
Yeah. Presumably, we would treat the wall here as we have walls up in this area as well, with creeping fig, that's soft, you know, something that's draping over that retaining wall. And I think softening it in that way would be an enhancement, especially, I personally would prefer that over the trash right at the entrance exit. But, you know, I'm open to ideas, but this is the plan agreed to by the neighbor, and he's very concerned about how much deviation and how much movement any vehicle needs to make in terms of passing through the site, and this is the best we could do. That was the primary reason for the movement.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Martin, do you have any questions for the applicant?
No.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yeah, no questions, but that's the same parking layout that we saw last week in the first exhibits, so it didn't really change just from before.
True. Going back to what Commissioner Keene had asked me, I certainly am not opposed to keeping the division of property lines. You know, we do need to make an annexation with the two lower ones just because the building straddles it, but I'm perfectly fine with leaving it alone on the other.
Do we have any other questions for
the... We would be phasing it also, so there would be less. I think I already mentioned that. It gives us a staging area, and it also gives us less traffic impact and parking impact if we phase it.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Do we have any other questions for the applicant? No. Did you have your project manager here to speak?
Yes.
Okay. Did you want to? Okay. Did you restate your name
for Randy Alonzo?
Thank you.
Yeah. What we have here is the project that was previously approved, modified to satisfy the neighbors to the left and the neighbors to the right. And this has been a very delicate balance because we are squeezed between the creek and the adjacent uses, and we have worked very diligently to modify the plan down to the inch to accommodate all of the interest of the parties that are involved. And so I think this plan has been dialed in quite well. There is there were easements adjacent to the driveways that we had to respect, and that's why the driveways have been modified slightly. And there is a cost associated with that, but we do not have any problem with removing and replacing to all current new standards for both of those driveways, and I think that we will be pleased with the results there. We will all be pleased with the results there. We're very pleased also that everybody who is interested in this project with the neighbors, they finally have consented with the current plan. And so I think that this is kind of a win-win-win because up to this point, we've gotten approvals from the ARC. Last approval was 5.0. We've gotten approvals from previous planning commissions and city council. However, there always seems to be a small technicality that prevents the project from moving forward. I think we're finally at a point where we have a perfectly approvable project and nobody seems to have any concerns with it. The only last items that we've added is the pedestrian trail along the riparian parkway with park benches and mutt mitts on either end and picnic benches or seating benches for both the residences who will be living there and the public who is welcome there. In fact, we are going to continue the design of the pedestrian path linking all the way down to the bridge going to the Kmart parking lot. And ultimately, I think this is going to be a great amenity that the city of Arroyo Grande will be able to have access to. There are technical aspects to the project, such as the 37.7 and the inches on the driveway and so forth. I'm not sure that we need to prolong the discussion to have a presentation on that, but there are additional slides and the architect is here. If you have any specific questions that have not already been answered, he's available. Otherwise, I think you have all of the information. Do you have any questions for me?
I'll have you stay up there just for a moment. We'll go back to Commissioner Kane. Do you have any questions for Mr. Alonzo?
On the new exhibit, I just noticed, and it might be a question of staff. Your intent is to share the parking stalls that are in the dark gray with the hotel next door as opposed to the word dedicate that I saw on A1.6?
Correct. The agreement is shared parking, and I think that it's a first come, first serve, and if he's there first, he gets them, and I think that's the way that it's lined up, and we're fine with that. We are required to have 49 parking spaces to serve our facility, and we provided 56 parking spaces, and that does not include those 18 units.
So we can strike out that word dedicated in your key and write the word shared?
Yes, I think so.
Did you have anything else? Okay. Commissioner Martin?
No questions, thank you.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
I had some questions for you. I don't know if you're the right person to ask, but I'll start with you.
The ingress and egress, the A1.6, mm-hmm. That's a different proposal than the one that's on the board there, because this one, you move the trash to the back, and now you have two lanes. So have you done any studies to show whether or not that is a safety issue at all?
We have done studies. Our traffic engineer stated that this is an acceptable solution. However, the ingress on the top and the ingress egress on the bottom is also an acceptable solution. In most cases, he would prefer the ingress only on the top and the ingress egress on the bottom. However, that would cause on-site circulation concerns. So for him, in this configuration, he said that he can support either way.
He doesn't have concerns of them turning into each other.
No, and also we're all aware that this is an existing condition where there's ingress, egress on both locations. We would be adding some more users at that location, but I'm not sure that it would actually tip the scales to influence, to make any a difference in his opinion.
So in his opinion, is there an option to make one egress left turn only and one egress right turn only? Is that an option at all?
We were calling it a double-double, which is what you see here. If it wasn't a double-double, then we would have the in only on the top and the double on the bottom. And that would satisfy the neighbors, and that's what he has agreed to. Adding the additional exit on the top would be an amenity for everybody, but it's not necessary.
So if I know that the condition with the neighbor is a tricky one, which is why we need to keep that bottom ingress and egress.
Correct.
Would the neighbor have an issue, you may not know the answer to this, if the bottom egress is right turn only?
I don't know if it would be a preferred one. I hesitate making any modifications because it might actually trigger a ripple effect that we'd be here again.
Okay. Thank you. I had one more question. Mm-hmm. I had an ex parte communication with Dr. Chappelle, and we had discussed the possibility of having staff parking off-site. Is that something that was able to be negotiated with the neighboring church?
It's something that we're open to, but I'm not sure that it should be tied to the approvals at this time. But we are... We will be owners of the property long-term, and our interest is to mitigate in any and every way that we can from this point forward. So it would be our interest to do so, but I don't think that it should be tied to the approvals.
Okay, because it's my understanding that at the peak of your service day, you have up to 20 employees. So how does that impact the number of parking spaces allotted for the rest of the development?
The parking for our particular project is estimated or determined to be 49 parking spaces, and we're providing 56. 20 of those spaces are included as the staff parking.
Okay, thank you. Those are all the questions I had.
Okay, thanks.
So at this time, I'd like to open it up to the community. Does anyone want to come and speak on this topic? No? Okay, then we'll close the community question portion and we'll take it back to the commission. So we'll move to comments unless we had any other questions. No? Okay, so Vice Chair Keene, do you want to start off with your comments?
Well, I really think there's a need for this project, and I'm really pleased that we're finally getting it to a point where we can move forward with it. I don't have any major problems with it because I think everything is more or less ironed out now, and I'm pretty much willing to go forward with it tonight. Just to comment about the egress turning right, Casagrande's not going to accept that because his trucks are going to want to go turn to Oak Park and go out on the freeway. So that's going to be a deal breaker for him, and he's the one that's been holding this hostage on this. So I don't think that's probably a good thing. I don't have a problem with the drives now, and the radiuses are going to be changed to make it easier to get in and out of on both drives. One of the advantages of the other thing was that drive kind of lined up with the church drive on the other side of the road, and now it doesn't. I don't really think that's a problem, but it was a convenience in design at that time. But now with the parking moved to the other side in front of the care center, I won't object to that. And as far as making the upper drive in entrance only, that means that all those cars up there have to go out and go out the bottom drive and be just like Commissioner Payne said last week about the amount of traffic driving in front of the care center. This way, all the people, they got a choice, but one of their choices for all the other, for Kennedy and the other medical buildings, is to go out that way rather than go past the front of the new care center. So I'm really in favor of having both of them in and out. As far as I don't have a problem either way with the lot line adjustment. I just think it'd be more convenient for them. But if in fact it was designed that way because of, as Matt said, the architectural of the setbacks and stuff on that lot, then I understand why. But it just seemed like the applicant would like to reserve the right to someday peddle that project. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Mack?
Yeah, I'd first like to start off by thanking Mr. Chappelle on providing a residential product that's actually a need of the community, not only now but here in the future, as opposed to providing market-rate housing. I think this is a real need. I was able to speak to the applicant. He did call me and was able to shed some light on some of the questions I had from the previous meeting. And one of the key things that I was stuck on was parking and not having enough parking for all the buildings. But it's come to my light that he doesn't own the parcel for Kennedy Nautilus. So to mandate that this project fix another parcel or owner's parking problem is not what this proposal is all about. So thank you for that and clarifying that. I can make the finding for the reduced creek setback. Originally, it was 25 feet, and then through policy, it changed to 35 feet. It's my understanding when you do the creek setbacks, when you look at that, it's for erosion and different reasons on top of the creek. And I know the other side, I went out to the project site, and the other side of the creek or top of creek line is significantly lower than this side. So I don't see any erosion possibilities on this side. And I support the reduction in the creek setback. I support the new plan. Except for the driveway relocation, I'm having a little bit trouble with that. It works now. I went out to the site. I saw several cars parked over the weekend going in and out of Kenning and Nautilus. They're using both driveways, making left and right-hand turns. I would just hope that if we're squeaking those even closer together, that we don't make that more problematic. I think in reviewing this, it is an improvement to have both driveways in and out. I would support staff in the upper driveway to make that a left-hand turn only out up towards Oak Park Boulevard. I heard that they have problems with a right-hand turn out of that driveway as a left-hand turn is being made out of the lower driveway. And I can see those two conflicting movements. It is my experience that these types of facilities, the types of parking and vehicle circulation that you're getting is mainly from visitors visiting assisted living. I would even support a sign on the drive coming down from the upper parking lot down to the lower parking lot to say this is assisted living patrons only. So you're not getting the Kennedy Nautilus overflow down and through and thinking they can find parking down below. I think that was my biggest problem with this is seeing the overflow of parking and people not parking where they should park. So I would support some signage to help improve the circulation on the site. I'm going to double check. I had a couple comments. And I'd also support, as long as we remove the dedicated parking that's shown on A1.6 from the motel and changing that to shared. I think it's a beautiful project. I like the color scheme. I support the Architecture Review Commission and the 37-foot height, maximum height. And I'd like to see the project move forward.
Thank you. Commissioner Martin?
Thank you. I also want to say thank you to Mr. Chappelle for giving me a call. We had a nice conversation, and I give him kudos for being conscientious to try to reach out and make sure we can address a lot of these issues. I, too, am supporting this project. We certainly are in critical need of this type of residential facilities for a growing part of our population. Just a few comments that I have. I think it's kind of outside of our purview, but my concern with the independent living building is we have 16 one-bedroom apartments. There are no balconies. I don't see any outside eating or, you know, picnic areas, very, very little landscaping around it. Frankly, to me, it looks more like a freshman dorm at a college rather than a senior living thing. It's not going to be too many years when I reach the appropriate age would qualify to move into that. My hope, as you go through your some final designs, there's an opportunity to provide more of that rather than expecting the seniors in that independent living to leave the building and walk around the assisted living to get down onto the pathway and find tables and chairs to find what I call a rest area, recreational area. I'm not a smoker, but I'm not an anti-smoker. Some of these people are going to be smoking, and it'll be interesting to watch them congregate and where they end up congregating in order to do that kind of thing. So those are the only comments. It's really, I think, outside of the purview of our commission here today. Professionally, I deal with parking and commercial properties every single day. And I have a slightly different take on it. Certainly these are you know, three different property owners that share a common parking lot. I think ideally, if the development had been improved all at the same time, my guess that there would have been some kind of CCNR designation or cross easements talking about the fact that the parking lot is going to be open and shared. My personal opinion, I'd like to see it completely open and shared rather than building A, reserving these four or five spaces, and building B, reserving these four or five spaces. The 18 spaces of that overflow along that one line that are going to be available for Casa Grande will end up being used by others in the plaza during peak times because Kennedy patrons and members are going to park wherever they can at the early morning and the late afternoon peak times. I do see that there's a good, I'll say, balance between peak times for some of these different businesses. Primarily, I think in the afternoon it's going to be interesting to watch when you have a busy time in the assisted living and your heavy staffing periods and people coming into Kennedy between about 4:30 and 8 o'clock at night. That parking lot is going to be busy. That's an ongoing issue. It's going to be an ongoing issue forever. As long as you recognize it's going to be an ongoing issue, and the owners, you know, and the neighbors appear to be supporting in that, just, you know, recognize that no matter what we approve here tonight, no matter how many parking spaces you stripe, parking is going to be a fun issue for you to continue to do. This has been a previously approved project. I like the modifications. I think they're in the right direction. And other than those comments and sharing those others on the commission, I think it's a good plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Martin. Commissioner Fowler Payne?
I only have two concerns, and one was I felt that there was a need for a designated crossing on from the independent living over to the assisted living so that trucks or buses traverse through there. Am I not on? There would be a designated area where they can cross and go through. So the other thing was doing some kind of designation for the 16 parking spaces for the independent area. I don't know how you want to identify them, maybe just on the asphalt or, you know, that those are designated for that independent living, maybe number them, whatever. Otherwise, I did feel that, again, Kennedy's patrons are going to come down and park wherever they can if it isn't designated. So that was it for me.
Thank you. Okay, so my comments are, one, I think it's a fantastic development, and I'm excited to see it move forward. I appreciate all your time and effort and money spent to get it to where it is today. I definitely like the change from the townhomes to the independent living. I think that was a nice change. The idea of having recreational space was something I hadn't considered, but that would be nice if that's something that is in your capability. I have no issues with the setback being 32 instead of 35, considering originally your entitlement was for 25, so moving it to 32 is not an issue for me. I support the double ingress and egress. I believe that as much traffic as we can get away from the assisted living facility, the better. So if there's a lot of traffic coming in and out for the other buildings, having a driveway that's not only in front of the assisted living is a benefit. So of the two parking, of the two driveway proposals, I would be in favor of the double ingress egress. The 37.7 height is not an issue or a concern for me, so I don't see any reason to not. I guess it's just 7 inches, right, is what I'm. So for me, I don't see an issue with that. I don't know if the ARC was set on 37, but if you go to 37.7, I wouldn't have an issue moving forward. For 7 inches. I appreciate the pedestrian pathway that you're putting in and all the efforts that you'll be putting in towards revegetating down the creek. I know that that's a lot of work, and I appreciate you moving forward with that. So all in all, I think that this is a great project. I think that our community needs it, and I'm in full support of it.
Can I have one more comment, please?
Yeah. Commissioner Vice Chair Keene?
Has there ever been any thought of one of these rows of parking being covered and putting solar panels on them. I don't know whether... not going to work for me. That one maybe would be shaded by the building in Casa Grande, but one of those could be somewhere. Just a thought about trying to save as much energy as possible.
It's an interesting thought that we'll consider as we go forward. We could already add that in there.
Thank you.
Yeah, the covered parking was brought up just the other day, I think. Either Lynn or Terry brought it up, and that was just 48 hours ago or something. So it's a new idea that's a good one.
Commissioner Keene, just suggest that, parking for assisted living is typically covered, so it would go to the intent of the municipal code's parking requirements if at least a portion of that could be covered, and the solar panels would be a good idea.
Great. So I'll close the commission comments portion and hear a motion if we can draft one.
I move the Planning Commission adopt a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande recommending to the City Council approved amended conditional use permit, case number 15001, variance case 15001, and lot merger case 15001 for the construction of approximately 55,000 square foot, 70-bed assisted living memory care facility and a 16-unit independent care facility located at 880 Oak Park, southeast corner of Oak Park and Boulevard and James Way intersection, applied for by Russ Chappelle.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Could we please get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler-Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes. So congratulations. Thank you for your time. We've been asked to have a 5-minute break, so we can resume back at 7:05, please. Okay, so we'll move on to public hearing 8B, consideration of conditional use permit case number 14-008. The location is Valley Road. The applicant is Verizon Wireless, and the representative is Russell Story. So if we could please have a staff report, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair George, members of the commission. The project site is located on Valley Road, about 150 feet south of Rio Grande High School, and is surrounded mostly by agricultural land. So Verizon Wireless proposes to install antennas and other equipment on an existing wood utility pole, and then other ground equipment within a cabinet located within the city's right-of-way. The pole is owned by a joint powers authority, and therefore the city does not collect any rent, so therefore we don't have a lease agreement with them. The Planning Commission continued this project from last November to receive more information regarding a few things, revisions to the city's telecommunication facility siting requirements to include small cell facilities, the cost and feasibility of placing the ground equipment into an underground vault, and then traffic bollard specifications. Included in your packet are proposed amendments to the city's telecommunication siting requirements. These amendments are draft and would ultimately require City Council approval. Staff does not recommend that these amendments be approved as part of this proposed project. These amendments will formally be considered with a pending development code amendment project to allow small cell facilities in the Village Core downtown area. So that is coming up. So we just want you to review them. It's just as draft for this particular project. The project as proposed does not meet, however, the draft telecommunication facilities siting requirements because the equipment cabinet is not within an interior building space or behind a parapet wall, within an underground vault, or within a landscaped area. Because of the site constraints, though, staff recommends that the project be approved as submitted, with the equipment cabinet relocated behind the pole as previously recommended by the Planning Commission. This relocation allows the cabinet to be further removed from the right-of-way, which improves safety and then also improves visual impacts. At first, we didn't think that there was sufficient right-of-way, but we did determine that there is indeed room to put that cabinet behind the pole. So this recommendation is also based on the large costs associated with placing the equipment in an underground vault, as explained in the staff report. It has also been determined that bollards around the equipment cabinet, as originally suggested by the staff advisory committee, will not necessarily improve vehicular safety and certainly would not improve visual impacts. Therefore, staff does not recommend bollards at this time at all. So this slide shows what the pole and surrounding area currently looks like, and a simulation of the pole with all of the proposed equipment installed as originally proposed. And then this is just another view of the equipment. As discussed during the November meeting and in the staff report, the purpose of the small cell site is to provide greater capacity within the Verizon network by providing additional antennas at key locations for faster data processing. So in this case, there is a significant cell phone usage, as you might imagine, within the vicinity of the high school, and this added facility will help reduce the number of dropped calls at peak hours. So to conclude, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution approving the proposed project with the equipment cabinet relocated behind the pole as discussed. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll start with Commissioner Fowler Payne. Do you have any questions for staff?
Yeah, I just had a couple, and I just wanted to know, I understand that the pole is in the PUE, but who owns the fee underlining of that piece of property?
Well, it's within the city's right-of-way, but because the facility is actually on the pole, it's the PUE, which means it's the power authority that owns the pole. Within the right-of-way, the equipment cabinet, I'm sure that's what you're talking about. Well, it's in the right-of-way.
I think what I'm trying to get at is, does the city own fee title to the underlying land, or do they just have the easement? And if it's just an easement, then who is the fee owner of the underlying strip of land where the easement is?
The way that I understand it is that the city only has the easement and that we do not have the ability to have any kind of a lease agreement and thereby get any kind of rent from this particular project. That is my understanding.
Okay, but that still didn't answer my question. Who owns fee title to that strip of land?
Matt Horn, city engineer. A majority of our roadway system is the right-of-way is just an easement over the top of it. The adjacent property owners own fee title to the property, so that's the way we prefer. It helps us with adjacent maintenance issues.
Yeah, and I understand that. And my question is the property owner been notified of that, and is he not opposed to having those blocks? Because when I went out there, you know, today, the grading is almost right up to the edge of pavement in this area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they're doing their farm production, are they aware that those boxes are going to be there? Because I didn't see anything in the package that said who the title owner was of that strip of land. And then I had another one. And the pole, is that a PG&E pole or a phone company pole?
It is a power authority pole. So there's a joint power authority.
And they've acknowledged the communication being placed on that pole?
The Verizon would have to get permission and negotiate a lease with the joint power authority to be able to do what they're planning on doing. Yeah.
Yes, and that's what I was asking, if they've already done that or if this is something that's...
Well, I'm sure they're waiting for this approval before they do that, yeah.
And Mrs. Reynolds is acceptable to this being added to that pole because it's directly across from her residence?
All of the property owners within 300 feet were notified, and we have not received, you know, in November we didn't receive any comments, and for this meeting we haven't received any comments. We assume that everything is fine with the adjacent property owners. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Martin?
I have no questions. Thank you.
No questions.
Commissioner Mack?
I have a question. Isn't it the policy of the city, like when a development moves forward, not that there's a development proposed on the adjacent property, to put utilities underground and try and get rid of power poles and power lines?
It is the policy of the city whenever there is new development to place utilities underground, yes. That is for, there's different regulations, so it depends on the type of project. So existing overhead utilities have to be placed underground or pay an in-lieu fee for certain types of projects, and then any new utilities are to be placed underground, yes. And this is a different situation. However, we do understand what you're getting at.
I'm just kind of looking towards the future. Would this preclude this particular power pole from being able to go underground if a development came forward in the future?
Right.
So this, I mean, we're looking at a permanent fixture here as opposed to a potential thing that can go away in the future.
And it is a possibility if they, meaning any kind of telecommunication carrier such as this, wants to establish a network that is on existing poles within various jurisdictions right-of-way, they are taking the chance that eventually roads will get widened, improvements get made. They would have to put those facilities underground, and I don't really know what that means for the future of these types of facilities. I wouldn't have the answer to that. But it is an issue, yes.
I'm just wondering if we should create a condition, though, if sometime in the future that you know, power pole is going to be required to go underground, that they're going to have to find another means to hang their equipment or relocate it.
Right. That's a very good point. Yes.
That's it.
If I might make a comment, because I've had experience with Verizon on these types of issues, that becomes a contractual agreement between the phone carrier that's putting up the equipment and the people that actually own the pole or own the building, whatever, that they're going on. And, you know, the hope and expectation. They're generally signing fairly long-term lease agreements on this. But in those contracts, there's always wording about, you know, I'll say the city authority or authorities coming in and changing the use or changing. It has an impact on that. So from my opinion, this is going to be much more of an issue between Verizon and the joint power organization or whatever it is that actually owns that pole and what happens when that pole comes down, versus us making a condition of that or needing to have a condition for that at this point. That's my opinion.
I have a few questions. Okay, first question on page 1, 2, 3, the first bullet point that you have, these are objections or as to why we can't place the box underground. Placing the equipment in a vault would increase ground disturbance for construction. Could you please explain that to me?
I would defer that to the applicant. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Then I will wait and ask the applicant. And that was my only question. Thank you. So at this time, we'll ask the applicant to come speak if you'd so like to.
Hello, I'm Russell Story with NSA Wireless. I'm a contractor for Verizon Wireless. Thanks for having me.
do you have any comments that you wanted to make?
The only one to Ms. Payne is that the with the Joint Pole Authority, JPA, Verizon enters into a licensing agreement with them. It's not a lease per se, because as Mr. Martin said, on a lease we will enter into a 25-year lease broken up into 5-year increments. But with the JPA, we are applying with them right now for the licensing agreement on this one pole. We do the engineering on the pole, make sure the wind loads are fine, make sure the pole doesn't have to be replaced. And the licensing agreement is a relatively nominal licensing agreement, but it goes through the communications sector, which is lower than the power, which runs above the communications sector, and all carriers, Cox Communications, Charter, you know, any telephone company have licensing agreement with the JPA, and they enter into these types of agreements for that type of usage.
Thank you. Commissioner Fowler Payne, did you have any other questions for the applicant?
No, I just have you worked with the property owner, the fee title owner, not the right-of-way, but the fee title owner?
There is no, as far as the right-of-way is concerned, where we're locating our cabinet, there is no parcel for the right-of-way. The parcel is the bordering property of the farmer. I'm not certain that was noticed, but there is no parcel for any part of the right-of-way. It's just owned by the citizens of the state of California. Does that make sense?
Having worked in survey for 20 years, I still don't think that you quite got what I was asking. That I know that that is an easement for public utilities and public right-of-way, but it's over a piece because the property owner owns to the center line of the street. Mm-hmm. So he is the fee title owner. And I didn't see anything in the documents that referenced to who was the fee title owner of that. And
I don't know the answer to your question. I'm sorry. I don't. I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. So you haven't dealt with anybody with regards to...
We don't at all on any of our joint pole authority proposed development. Maybe it's something that the joint pole authority... they deal with them directly. I don't know, but I don't think that the underlying, if there is, property owner has anything to do with our proposal or our development on that piece of property. Okay? Sorry. I wish I knew more. I don't.
That's still my concern, but that they have not... given consent to have that on their property since they are the fee owner and it isn't, there's no place on here indicated as to who that person is, but I'll deal with engineering department on that.
Do you have any other questions?
That's it for me.
Commissioner Martin?
Yeah, I have no questions. Thank you.
Vice Chair Keene? Commissioner Mack?
I'm going to try and reiterate what the commissioner was striving at and what I alluded to. And that is there's a property owner that fronts this street. He can potentially develop this property in the future. He would be required to put in street improvements, curb, gutter, sidewalk, put utilities underground. We don't know what the future holds. So... if this developer or this landowner comes forth with a project and all of a sudden this pole has to go underground and has to go in a vault, who bears the expense? The property owner, the developer who's putting in the project, or Verizon?
Well, I'm sure Verizon would have to come in and relocate the cabinet, choose another suitable location. We from time to time do have to relocate facilities because buildings get torn down or a taller building gets built in front of our existing building where our facility is, and then it blocks the RF transmission, so we have to locate on a different building. So we just, you know, we demolish the existing site and then relocate at, so at Verizon's cost.
We're just trying to protect the rights of the property owner. And, you know, if there's something very expensive that goes on that has to get relocated, sure, that the landowner doesn't bear that expense.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we want to develop on the these different wood poles, because it does minimize costs, right? And we're not paying out a monthly lease amount that escalates at the end of every year and, you know, can be renegotiated normally on every five-year anniversary. So that's one of the reasons that we do, at times, target wood poles. Okay. Did I answer your question?
So you would be willing, though, to pay for that expense for relocating it?
If that's something that would have to have been done, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. No further questions.
I do have one additional question. Sure. Is there going to be other carriers on that pole or just Verizon?
There are clearances that have to be kept for every wood pole. So normally there wouldn't be another carrier that would come in and locate there, but I have no idea what, you know, any other carrier is proposing within the city. I don't have that knowledge. I'm only working with Verizon Wireless at this time.
I just know, having worked with carriers on poles in the past, that they'd come in and establish a pole, and there'll be, you know, four or five carriers on one pole.
Right.
And then they work with a property owner, and they pay a lease for that. So this is my curiosity.
Must
is
be,
this is what's transpiring here?
It must be located not within the right-of-way, because we do, you know, a lot of leases with private landlords all the time, and but it's actually on a parcel of land that has an assessor's parcel number associated with it, whereas this right-of-way does not have a parcel number associated with it. So in that case, yes, we would work directly with the landlord, but normally on a wood pole, my knowledge is that there's only room for one carrier, so another carrier would have to move down away from the school or closer to the school in order to be able to locate in that communication sector.
Okay.
Can I ask some questions for you?
All right.
So the ARC is requesting that you move the RRUs inside the equipment cabinet. Is that a feasible request?
I meant, yeah, absolutely. And I think that was addressed on the drawings. It just wasn't illustrated on the photo simulation. I meant to make a point of that. Yeah, the RRUs are coming off the pole.
Okay, so that's
They're going in the cabinet. Yeah, exactly. Those are coming off. And the antenna is being painted to match the pole. And the cabinet is also being painted Mesa Brown, as picked out by the Planning Commission or the Planning Department.
Okay. My next question for you is a question I asked for staff, so I'll just repeat it for you. Placing the equipment in a vault would increase ground disturbance for construction. Could you explain that to me?
Well, I'm not certain what size vault would have to be placed in the ground, but we would have to excavate a large amount of dirt to place a concrete vault down inside in the dirt, and then fit the cabinet within that. Whereas here, we're just going to barely scratch the top of the dirt, put our foundation down, and then place our cabinet on top of that. So we won't be moving hardly any dirt.
Okay, so the disturbance is just during the construction
time.
It's not something down the line?
No, nothing ongoing.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, on the, not your dirt question, but the power, will be stubbed up near the cabinet also. So there will be nothing on the pole except for our conduit going up to the antenna.
So if that cabinet is underground, then the power would be behind the pole, stubbed up behind the pole at the base then?
Right. It'll be underground and then come up and stubbed up right at the cabinet itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea, looking into the future, how many units we're expecting to see come before us with the same request? I know I'm just, I know right. you're just speculating, yeah. but I'm just curious.
Well, I have this one. Trisha Knight has one. And then I'm trying to find another one at Five City Center, but I'm having a heck of a time. That's all. And she's working with Verizon, so that's three for Verizon in total for the Arroyo Grande. So to my knowledge, I have, you know, I don't have any knowledge of AT&T's plans or Sprint's plans or anything else. But Verizon's, you know, one of the major carriers, so three in total, so not that many.
Okay. Those are all the questions I had for you. Thank you very much. I appreciate
you.
Your time.
Okay.
Before I open it up to public comment, I wanted to bring it back to staff. I had a couple questions that I just missed asking you prior, so I apologize for that. I'm looking at the draft changes for the telecommunications facility siting and permit submittal requirements. And I'm on page 3, number 3. So where it says equipment cabinets shall be located as follows, so that they are not visible from any public street within an interior building space, behind a parapet wall, within an underground vault, or fully screened within a landscape area. I know that you had addressed that in your opening comments. My question is, why are we making the exception? Why aren't we pursuing the underground vault? Is cost the only issue?
There are a lot of opportunities to put these types of small cells, like it says in the draft modifications, where if you're in a developed area behind a parapet, that there's lots of different opportunities. In this particular circumstance, they've already done their site analysis to determine that this is a good location to pick up the dropped calls, you know, to add these additional antennas. And there really is no other way to camouflage the equipment except for putting it in an underground vault. And the applicant had come forward with, which is in the staff report, the reasons why undergrounding of the vault is a cost problem for them. So, yes, it does come down to a cost issue. And there's also the issue that, as is also in the staff report, that there are a lot of utility or equipment cabinets throughout any jurisdiction. They're prevalent everywhere. It's just a matter of, well, do we want to stop doing that if we can? And is it unreasonable to ask that? And that becomes a question for the commission, really. So that's why we bring it all up for you to deliberate on, and we're open to suggestions.
Okay. Thank you. I had one other question for you, and this isn't something that can be resolved tonight. It's just something that I would like to ask and have you just consider it for the future. In the general plan, under the objective S-5, it doesn't address radio frequency. So as more and more of these antennas go up, are we concerned that that is a safety issue at all for our people, our peeps?
For any kind of facility such as this, they always have to provide a radio frequency report to us, and that is included in the staff report.
I didn't see it. Could you show? I'm sorry. I did honestly look for it, and I didn't see the report.
I did not, and I apologize.
Starts
page 3 of 14. It's supposed to be attachment number 6. And if I did not include it, I apologize. But no, it's in there. It's in there.
Okay, I see it. Thank you. Okay, those were all the questions that I had, so thank you. Did anyone else have questions for staff before I open it up to public comment?
No comment.
Okay, so I'll open this up for public comment. Did anyone want to speak on this matter? No. All right, I'll close the public comment portion, and we'll move to commission comments. So I'll start with Commissioner Fowler Payne.
I'd just like to have a notation made on there that no other carriers can be on this poll without having approval by the city and commission, so that they're not, so somebody else doesn't come in and put another carrier on that same pole.
A conditional use permit would be required for any other carrier, so it would come before your body, yes.
And that's the only comment I have.
Okay. Mr. Martin?
No comments, thank you.
Vice Chair King?
I'd just like to comment about the underground vault. Normally, I would say that we need an underground vault. But given this location and maybe the safety aspect of an underground vault there and the plowing of that field right up to wherever they can plow, I think it would be more dangerous than having the vault or the equipment just sitting up there in visual thing. And that is site-specific to me, because when the applications come in for other ones, I'm going to have a completely different attitude about vaults. But this particular one, I think that it would just work out better to have the equipment on the ground. Just a personal note. Thank you.
Commissioner Mack.
I don't have too many issues, because this is a rural area. If it was located more in a residential or improved area, definitely underground. But with that, I do see that the Architectural Review Committee did do their job and point out some other specific issues, and I do believe it does need to be protected. I don't see the bollards on the drawing, but I believe that's still a condition to provide the bollards for protection, correct or not?
They changed it to reflective tape.
So a tractor could back into it and a car could hit it.
So the discussion is that with, Chairman George, if I can reply.
Yes, please.
Okay. The thought about having the bollards, it was meant to be for a safety reason, you know. And so the idea was that after we thought about it was, if a car went and crashed into the bollards, that would cause more bodily damage potentially than just crashing into the cabinet, just mowing down the cabinet. Because it's just more of an impact. But cabinet, you're just like... So if you kind of picture that, that was the reason why we went with not requiring the bollards. And then also for aesthetic purposes, if we tucked it behind the pole, it, you know, for both aesthetics and also for safety, it gets it a little bit further away from the right-of-way. But, yeah, reflective tape is what we're also looking at doing just at nighttime, so that because it's just so dark along that rural road, at least, you know, they could see it in the distance. So that was the reasoning.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I think if they come and hit that box, they're going to hit that pole, too. So I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference.
Yeah, it's more for protecting the equipment. If there's no high voltage in there, then there's really not an issue. It's just... You're out that $30,000 piece of equipment. So I really don't have taken issue with whether it's above or below ground. I think above ground in this instance is applicable. But I think we're doing more than just approving the specific. We're also approving the language corrections on this as well, correct?
No, not at this time. Those are draft. I wanted the commission to at least review them and understand how maybe what we're looking at, how that applies to this particular project and then projects in the future. But we are going to be coming forward with a specific development code amendment that's more thorough, that will include these amendments and allowing cell sites within our village core downtown area. Right now, you can't have them in this whole area here. So anyway, it's for you to look at and to think about, so it will be coming up.
Yeah, I'll just add it's been helpful, and this is kind of the reason why we did this. So we have a case study, if you will, and we're developing some potential proposed amendments to the policy that will guide future facilities. So what I'm hearing is, yes, we want this the facilities put underground, or thoroughly screened with a wall, or and as described and as pointed out by Chair George. But maybe there's some exceptions that would be okay with the commission and going forward. So to me, I would think that coming forward with a revised draft, you'll probably see an exception clause in here that it would indicate that, you know, when for facilities located in rural areas or near agricultural fields, it may be acceptable to not place them underground. And I would be interested in your comment on that.
Thank you.
No, that's it. That just kind of reiterated what I just said. In the rural areas, I really don't have a problem with it being above ground.
Okay. I think that Director McClish did answer some questions for me. When I read this, I took it as these were the requirements, period. And my concern with straying away from the requirements and creating exceptions that aren't listed in here is that we're setting precedence for future sites to come in and say, well, so-and-so did it here, and you made an exception. And so for me, I'm not in support of this project because based on everything that I've read in here, it doesn't comply. So we either have requirements that are requirements or we have guidelines and suggestions. So if this is the requirement for which the Planning Commission is supposed to be using as part of our decision to vote on, then it doesn't fall with the project doesn't fall within the requirements. So for me, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. It just it doesn't meet it. But if you're telling me that this is just a draft and it's not actually a requirement at this point, then that gives me a little more hope and makes it a little bit easier for me to support this project. I agree with my fellow commissioners because it is in a rural area. It can be, I mean, there's no way for it to be screened. It's just there's nothing there. So unless it goes underground. However, on the flip side, if the reason it can't go underground is because it's cost prohibitive, then that's something if we say it has to be put underground, then in the future, it's just the cost is just built into the cell site installation, and the companies are aware that if there is no way to screen it, it will be underground, and they will have to absorb that cost in hopes that the companies will then be more proactive to get a better price for installation. I read 30,000. I don't know where those numbers came from. I'm not arguing with those numbers, but if you do it enough, sometimes you can, you know, sharpen that pencil a little bit. So for me, those were my comments. I was not in support of the project because I didn't feel like it fit with the requirements. But now knowing that these requirements are going to be modified, hopefully with an exception clause for rural areas, then I can support this project with the Architecture Review Committee changes. So that's my comment. So we can move for a motion.
I move the commission adopt a resolution approving. You just took all my wording away from me. I have no idea what I'm going to say now. Approving this, the CUP 14-008, and I, as I recall, there was just with an alteration to move that box, you know, from this closer to the street to behind the pole.
We have a motion and a second. Can we please get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes. Okay, so we'll move on to item 9, non-public hearings. This is the consideration for pre-application number 14-006. The location is Rodeo Drive and Grace Lane. The applicant is Colmer Construction, and the representative is Wayne Colmer. Please get a staff report.
Sure. Thank you, Chair George, members of the commission. The purpose of this pre-application is to receive Planning Commission comment on a potential 18-lot residential subdivision of a 7.52-acre piece of property. The project site is located within the Royal Oaks planned development area, as shown in this particular map. The site is surrounded by low medium density residential development to the west and north, open space to the east, and vacant multifamily residential property currently owned by the county to the south. The site is currently undeveloped, was previously graded back in the 1980s, we believe, and that was for a project that did not follow through and for reasons that we don't have any answers to at this point. But the site includes a variety of vegetation, such as your typical weeds, grasses, shrubs, and then 16 trees of varying species and sizes and health. The topography ranges from steep slopes to that flat terraced area that I just spoke about. The property is identified as lot 184 in the Royal Oaks plan development, which allows only one dwelling unit. However, in 2001, the general plan was updated and designated this property as low-density single-family, allowing one dwelling unit per acre, so that would be seven dwelling units. To allow the proposed development to occur, a general plan amendment is necessary to modify that Royal Oaks plan development and allow a higher density. It requires a development code amendment to change the zoning from PD 1.3 to residential suburban and allow 2.5 dwelling units per acre. A tentative tract map then to divide the property into 18 lots. And finally, a plan unit development to allow a clustered subdivision with smaller lot sizes allowed in that residential suburban zoning district. Adjacent subdivisions in Rancho Grande and Grace Lane, they both in those areas have similar density, yet larger lot sizes. So basically it depends on how much open space you have that kind of takes into consideration the overall density. So in this case, there's quite a bit of open space that is being proposed. So the density is correct, but the lot sizes are small. So the proposed project would subdivide this property into 18 lots, like I said, that would average about 4,000 square feet in size. The purpose of a clustered subdivision is to allow smaller lot sizes in order to be efficient with infrastructure and then to preserve open space. In this case, there's some steep slopes to preserve and vegetation. Although these lots are smaller than the residential subdivisions located to the north, the density is the same when factoring in the open space, like I just mentioned. The single-family detached units would be one and two stories located on a private cul-de-sac. The homes would range in size from roughly 1,600 to 2,300 square feet with two and four bedrooms. Site planning of the homes has been designed to limit grading and the need for any type of retaining walls outside of the existing graded pad area. So it's all meant to try to keep all of the site disturbance in the areas that you see where those lots are. The street, open space area, and retention basin areas would be owned and maintained by a homeowners association. The applicant proposes that the homes be built with green building features, and he could get into that if you have questions about it. All setbacks will be determined at the time of formal submittal, but preliminarily it looks as if all the setbacks could be met per what is required with our development code. As part of the environmental review process for the formal submittal, the applicant will need to address several issues, and those include the ones that are on the screen. Water availability is probably the largest issue that we're going to have to deal with this project. This is a very big concern given that the higher density was not anticipated in the original general plan update, and there therefore is a need to neutralize the additional water demand for this particular project. So 7 units were allowed per the general plan. They're proposing 18, so they would have to neutralize the additional 11 units. Tree removal is a concern since a total of 8 trees are proposed to be removed, and that includes one dual coast live oak tree. Adequate fire flow is potentially a problem, but more research is necessary to determine if the city has adequate water pressure to serve this project in the event of any kind of a fire emergency. Stormwater drainage and retention is a concern given that the soils at this particular location do not perk well, and the slopes are relatively steep for many portions of the site. The project will need to provide adequate facilities to retain stormwater runoff per state requirements, and that is for any kind of development. We're getting stricter and stricter on this particular requirement. Traffic and circulation issues would be focused on the project's proximity to the Brisker Road interchange. There would be a small offer of dedication that would be required for part of that, and the applicant is aware of that particular requirement. Affordable housing mitigation will likely be satisfied through in-lieu fees. Aesthetics are always a concern when you put in a new subdivision in an existing established residential neighborhood, but the photo simulations that the applicant has submitted with the package shows that given the topography, it's really not going to be too much of an issue of blocking any kind of views. So it's more of just the fact that it's currently vacant, and then there are going to be houses on there. That's different. So, but that would all be addressed through the formal application. Other environmental factors potentially affected with this particular project would be, as with any project, air quality, noise, cultural resources, and recreation. So in summary, the applicant is currently seeking comments and suggestions from the Planning Commission on processing a general plan amendment and other related applications for this particular project. Ultimate approval of the project would allow residential development of a site that currently only allows 7 units to allow up to 18 units. The project would provide a logical transition from multifamily zoned property to low density residential development. So we see this as a good logical stepping between multifamily and low density. So staff is therefore in support of this project and sees this as infill development. And that is most definitely consistent with our housing element. So that's why we are in support of it. So the largest obstacle that we see, of course, is water, like I mentioned. So with that, staff recommends that the Planning Commission review the plans and provide any comments that you have to the applicant. And the applicant also has a PowerPoint presentation that, if you don't mind, I might put up on the screen right now and let him talk.
Good evening. My name is Wayne Colmer. I'm the applicant and hopefully, ultimately, the home builder and developer of the property. I have with me this evening the civil engineer, Jeff, and the property owner is also here this evening to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Let's go to slide 2. Just to summarize, it's a 7.5 2-acre property. We're proposing 18 single-family detached homes. They're 1 and 2 stories. The homes will have 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms. There's a number of configurations that can go on within the 3 different floor plans that can make them vary in size and vary in bedrooms. There'll be 3 elevations ultimately of each plan, and the street's designed with 2 points of ingress and egress. The architecture will feature the use of wood, stone, and stucco materials on the front elevations. The building exteriors will use muted earth tones and will also use complementary accent colors. The front elevations will have varied setbacks to provide a creative street look. If we go, this is plan number one. It's a one-story home. It has 1,631 square feet. It can be configured with two bedrooms and a den or three bedrooms. It's got a master bedroom, of course, downstairs because it's one stories. Next, plan two. Plan two can be configured in a 3-5 bedroom configuration. It has the option for up to two masters, one downstairs, one upstairs. There's two optional configurations downstairs and two configurations upstairs. Plan three would be the largest plan, and it's four bedrooms with a Jack and Jill bath, and it has an interesting outdoor living area that's almost part of the house. Next slide, please. This is a simulation. The upper simulation is before, and the bottom simulation is after. And this is from Bristol, looking up from the freeway towards the property, and you can barely see the houses in the background. Very little visual impact from the highway and from Bristol. Number two is a view northwest from Mercedes Lane, and you can see how the views of the houses, you can see the houses are sort of nestled up against the cut slopes in the background. There's very little impact here. Three is southwest from Rodeo Drive, and it's sort of a very dark, I don't know, can we lighten that up? There's a minimal impact in that view. And configuration number four, simulation number four, is a view from just below the church on Grace Lane. And it has somewhat of an impact, but not much. The homes and the site plan are sort of graded into the cove of the already pre-graded lot that's there. And we've tried to design a site plan that limits the amount of grading. There are a few retaining walls on site, but not many, and they're most of them are approximately 3 feet tall. And we recognize that with this application, the elephant in the room is solving the water problem. And we're hopeful that we can get some guidance tonight and we can move forward, provided we can solve the water problem. We recognize that if we can't solve the water problem, we don't have a project.
I'll have you have a seat so we can ask questions of staff first. Thank you. Vice Chair King, do you have any questions for staff?
Sorry.
It's okay.
I noticed that on the topo map we got of the layout that you have on the screen, the second entrance that I'm assuming goes to Grace Lane is not shown. All it is shown as a utility easement. So I was wondering, is problem getting that road through somebody else's property, or why is that design, or why is that pictured like that?
Are you referring to this right here?
Yes.
They needed to have a second access for emergency purposes. So
that is just emergency, or is that?
It was meant to be for emergency second access, yes. Not for circulation. So, and this is a plan that was submitted after. So what you have in your packet does not show this, except for as an exhibit or one of your attachments. This is something that came after it went to Staff Advisory Committee. So they proposed this as the most logical point of secondary access.
Did you want to come speak?
I think you have an old old plan. Can I give you a copy of the
Sure, thank you.
Plan?
Yeah. Well, just so that does show the access through there. That's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's all questions I have of staff.
Did you want to ask questions of the applicant, or should we finish with staff first?
No.
Okay.
Job, okay.
Did you want to ask any questions, Commissioner Mack?
That was going to be one of my first points, is we don't have emergency access going all the way through, or a turnaround, or a fire department turnaround, but you got that second access, so I was going to require that. Has there been an environmental report done at all? Like for any little critters or manzanita or wildlife out there that might, or pismoclarkia, are you going to require that?
Well, as part of the environmental review for the formal application, we most certainly will be diving into all aspects of environmental review. As a pre-application, we feel like this is pretty good for, you know, an initial submittal for us to look at and get some good response back to the applicant, but... Yeah, at this point in time, we don't get into the real details of any kind of environmental review. They've done a tree inventory, which I think is pretty good.
I would suggest that when he moves forward, you know, at least the phase one.
Sure.
Not a full-blown EIR, but just a study. Can either staff or the applicant explain to me how the drainage is being handled, both from the water from the residents and with the new LID measures and where the water from the roads are going and how they're being retained?
I believe that the applicant's representative is willing to talk about that.
Good evening. Jeffrey Amrick, Gehring Taylor & Associates. There's two things, and one of the thoughts that I had on this, John, was I can remember the piece of paper, the calculations done for the original tract, and I do believe they included this area. So there's one piece of that puzzle is I think that ultimately this water is going to end up in the retention basin and be routed through that and down through past the county government center. I don't know. Ms. Payne might remember that too. But secondly, we have up, you see two open areas up near the entrance, near the high side of Rodeo there. Those are meant to be stormwater basins and more just stilling basins for the initial 85th percentile storms. The other part of the road from where it turns down the hill is going to be more of a challenge. We'll probably have some inlets there and run it through some separators to separate out the grits and try to work it in that way. This piece of property was, a large part of it was excess dirt from the building of the tract. And so what we find is it's a very fine material, it's very erosive, and it doesn't perk very well. And so there will be some challenges with that. I don't know if I'm answering the question or dodging
it. In a roundabout way.
We will be incorporating a number of different strategies throughout the site to handle the water in different ways. And it may be somewhat on-site for each of the lots, a little bit of that, stilling basins, some... As Tim at the county calls it, some swirlies.
Knowing that it doesn't perk, though, you'll probably have to use a bunch of different
strategies
to come to one solution if it's not perking.
It's difficult to do.
Rainwater barrels under downspouts, those sorts of things, or
you know, it's a tough project. First, you want to know how we're going to get water, and then the next thing you're asking is how we're going to get rid of it. So, you know, I hope that's helped.
Well, the main big issue is just, you know, where the water is going to go, because you might, before too long, if you don't have the perk, you might lose a lot or one or two lots, just a retention area. You probably want to know that early up.
That's right.
Instead of too late.
No. Matt will hold my feet to the fire. I know that.
And then the width of the street, what's the width of the street being proposed? Is it city standard or?
No, I'm going to tell you we've got a couple of different widths working between, I'm going to say, I think it's 24 to 32. Or either that or it was 20 and 28. But it's essentially we've got two-way traffic and parking on one side of the street and roll curbs throughout.
So that's kind of what I was getting at is it doesn't look like a city standard street where you can park on both sides, and guest parking is always an issue. So if you're not going to provide a full width wide street, my recommendation is to provide additional guest parking so, you know, we have enough parking for guests. And especially when you go down those private driveways for, like, and here again, I got an old site plan. Units 16, 13 through 16, and 11 and 12, where do guests park?
Minimum required parking is provided per city standards, but I hear what you're saying.
Because in essence, you know, 13, 14, 15, and 16, there's no place for guests to park. And we don't count guest parking on driveways. Which leads me to my next question is what are our front setbacks from the units to the street? They look really small. Are we doing the 20 feet, 25 feet?
We've got part of what you're seeing is that I've tried to, I mean, we've got the, let's see, we have the sidewalk on the inboard side, so it's not adjacent to the majority of the units, I believe. Yeah, it's 20 in the front, and we do have room for that, John. Yes. It's 20 feet setback to the garage door. So I think part of what you're seeing is the units are set up so there's a pop-out in the front for that front bedroom that he's using.
It seems to me that the bedrooms and stuff or the pop-outs on the buildings might be getting like 15 in some cases. So this is like a PUD?
It is a PUD.
So this is it going to be a private street as opposed to
it is a private street.
Okay.
Now that I'm looking at it, I have 28-foot streets.
So then if it's a private PUD, I would probably be looking for guest parking.
For additional guest parking? Okay.
I've just there's suggestions.
All right.
And if there's any opportunity, is there going to be any open green space or area for the PUD to congregate?
I think we've got the open space per unit covered in the individual units as private open space. And then the whole downslope area and the whole upslope of the banks are going to be landscaped, and that's more of a passive open space use for that.
But my issue is not open space that you just look at from your window.
It's usable.
Actual usable space that could be used for, let's say, a horseshoe pit, for example, that's functional, that you can actually use.
The opportunities for common open space are limited. There are a lot of opportunities to put in additional parking areas, however. So we can easily do that. The common open space may be a problem. Depends on where the detention basins wind up and how we use them.
Food for thought, you know, work it into your design somehow. I see you have three possibly guest stalls on the old plan across from Unit 11. It seems like a flat area, but I don't know how that S drive going down now, the second driveway, kind of knocks out that extra flat area.
It cuts down too deep through that to try and get down to to Grace Lane and a reasonable slope.
So, for example, you know, lot 17 seems to be your biggest lot that has flat usable space behind it. It might be an opportunity to work in an amenity or something. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting back to the development code and what's required for a PUD and usable open space and guest parking and those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. It's
besides 17 and 18. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my comments.
Thank you. Commissioner Martin, do you have questions for staff or for the applicants since they're standing?
For me, it's more comments. And to make it real simple, I don't see 18 different buildable residential lots. I see a successful plan coming much closer to 7. I think it is a little bit premature to try to get that too tight tonight. But when we talk about water retention ponds, additional parking, common open space, and a 4,000 square foot lot that conceptually has available, you know, outdoor, you know, space that's usable around these lots, I just don't see where we can get that squeezed in, or you can get that squeezed in as a developer with 18 separate residential homes. It's too tight for my liking. I certainly don't have a problem with the curvy road going in. I don't have a problem with residential development. I'd like to see something less intense, you know, recognizing that there's some real significant challenges because it is a very, very hilly site. But, you know, without beating a dead horse, I think, you've got a lot going on, a lot of things. There are aspects of the project that I like. I think that visitor parking is going to be an issue. You're putting in a 3 or 4 or 5 bedroom home. These are ideally homes that are probably end up with, you know, teenage drivers at some point. You're going to have 3 or 4 cars on an individual lot. Anytime any kind of party or celebration or social function is going on, it could easily just overwhelm all the parking. You get two different residents that want to put a party on at the same time, and it'll have a significant impact. So for me, my primary comment would be is to look at a project that will decrease the number of homes and allow for slightly larger lots and, you know, recognizing some of the other challenges that the site presents. You know, the view shed and the impact and things like that, that's going to come with any kind of development, you know, with the traffic and all that kind of stuff. And I think you guys are certainly capable of addressing that and dealing that. Those are my comments.
Commissioner Fowler Payne.
Okay, I know this site almost too well. Having said that, would you consider eliminating lots 17 and 18? You'd have recreational area, you'd have parking, you'd have maybe the possibility for a recreational area depressed with a drainage there. I mean, you're only taking off 2 lots and not, you know, half of them. The other thing was along 16 or 14 through 16, you narrow down the road there, so there isn't any sidewalk or parking adjacent to those. 13, 11, and 12 have got, you know, their own additional parking, so I wasn't concerned with them. The other thing is I know the impact on Rodeo. They've already got speed bumps along through there on Rodeo Drive to slow the traffic down. And they do have a problem there, even with the speed bumps. I know that personally. And that emergency access that goes out to Grace Lane, who's that agreement with?
It's part of the property.
Of this piece of property? It's not another property owner.
It's on our property.
It's okay. I was concerned about that. Yes, and I don't have that plan either. Yeah. So you are bringing it all the way down then to Grace. Well, that's so now you've got continued circulation. That was one of my comments I was going to make, but I didn't know whether it had to do with the grade change. And I know this has been on the table for, I hate to say many years, because it kind of puts me back there, too. What is the in-lieu fee for affordable housing now per unit?
Well, it's 1% of the cost to construct a unit, not the land value, but the actual construction of a unit. Yes.
Okay. All right. And then I do have a couple other ones. Has there been a neighborhood study with the adjacent property owners to get their input on this? Increasing this density because of circulation and
we have not met with the neighbors.
Yeah, I was just going to say because I know they're going to, there may be some issues there. The other thing, I know in the county they have a ordinance requirements where you can't peak the ridge line. Do we have something in place for that? Because when you look at the, and I don't know which number he's got in, I think it's the from four.
Number four.
Because you look right across the flat of that terrace.
Yep, because the way it's, that's almost kind of a valley there. And then when you're peaking that ridge line of that little valley, when you're up there, and I was there this morning, you look down, you're going to block that ocean and view from the residents up higher. This is going to come up and obstruct that valley view through there. Is there a way that, are all the units going to be constructed two-story?
They're one- and two-story units.
Well, is there some way where the one-stories could be put up there so you don't have that break in the ridge line? Or do you know what I'm talking about, Jeff?
I know what you're talking about. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. The flat pad is where the flat pad is, and if we develop in that area, it's going to provide some obstruction just at that one location.
Because I can just see these people up here, as soon as some structure goes in there and there's no view shed study done, it's going to block their view of the ocean through there.
I'm thinking that it's more of quite the possibility from the church.
Chair George, can I just remind the applicant to come to the mic?
Thank you.
Commissioner Payne, I think the view shed may have what you're talking about from the church, but not so much from, I'm thinking it's lots 1 and 2 and 3 of the Grace Lane neighborhood, because those are tucked back more. If you remember, the road comes around the church, and then you're back behind that. And the church is also up high enough where it's really looking across that pad now.
Across the top.
Well, yeah, it's not necessarily down, but it's very much very close to the same elevation.
Well, my suggestion would be to do, some view shed study there on the adjacent residents, just to avoid a problem at a later date.
Just so we have the answer.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to look at it now on paper, but as soon as you start putting structures up there, and it blocks their view. Okay, let me see. I think that's it for me. Go ahead.
I don't have anything else to add. I think that looking at the staff advisory committee bullet points, you have plenty to to work on. I think that the water issue is going to be a big one for you, and I don't know if that's something that you're working with the city to come up with options for resolving, or?
We're looking for solutions. We don't have any right now.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I missed Vice Chair Keene.
The only advantage I see to this is that the lots are so small that you're not going to have any grass, and it'll help on the water usage. That's the only advantage. My problem is this was designated for 7 lots, and now we've got 16 or 17. I think the lots are way too small, because I think that they should be 60. I think they should be 6,000 square foot lots, and I think they should be at least 60 foot wide. You have to have some place for people to go out their back door and barbecue. These setbacks, 5 foot on each side, and no backyard. And then all of this open space is not available for them for any kind of recreation. This is just too dense for this piece of property. The lots are going to have to be, I would suggest, 6,000 and 60 foot wide, because that's basically what our standard is. And I think that what we need to go to that standard. I know that I'm really a stickler on the 20-foot setback to the garage, and I see that on here it kind of indicates that the property line is back of sidewalk, so it's 20 foot back from back of sidewalk. What we've been getting is some of these projects that are 20 foot back, but the cars hang over the sidewalks, and that's one of the things that we're really going to look close at when you come back, is not having a situation where the sidewalks are obstructed by the cars. The water situation, I'm sorry, is really going to be a problem for you, and I hope you get that situated. But I think that it will help you if you reconsider some larger lots, and that will decrease the number and help your water usage. And I just think it'll be a lot better project. Right now, I'm really skeptical about the way the quality of life would be in these houses. So that's all the comments I have.
Just to clarify a couple things, the front yards are all 20 foot from the edge of the sidewalk or back of the curb, depending on whether it has sidewalk on that side of the street or not, to the garage door. Right. Backyards are a minimum of 10 feet of flat usable area.
Thank you. The backyard is not on here, but I was gauging it. I just kind of scaled it from you know, the 5-yard setback that is designated on here.
Yes.
And so
I have a couple comments to add.
Yeah.
Now that I've been able to lean over my colleague's shoulder here and look at the revised grading plan, which wasn't in my first review. It looks like the single retaining wall behind lots 14 through 16 has become a triple retaining wall. So I have concern with that. Is that like 3 6-foot walls going up that slope? So
we're chasing a 2-to-1 slope.
So yeah, so here's my comment. And it's something like I did over on Stonecrest. You may deserve a different unit design and do an uphill unit and put the driveway further down, like below lot 16 and 15, and do an uphill where you park down below and you go upstairs to an upper level, reduce a lot of grading, a lot of retaining walls. Because when you get those dark backyards or front yards like that, it kind of puts the unit in a hole. So I'm not a favor of a lot of grading to just try and force a footprint to repeat.
Which ones you talking about?
You got your little corner.
Because the only ones that are into a cut with walls in the back would be the
17. I'd say it looks like there's a triple retaining wall back here.
Yes, but that's in the front. That's in
the front?
Back. Okay.
So it's like retaining wall, retaining wall, retaining wall.
No, I agree. But it's there, and then we have the access drive, then the units.
And then so it's going up from contour 220 to 230, or 200 to 230. So you're like overcoming a 30-foot grade break with those three retaining walls.
You're absolutely correct, Commissioner Mack. I'm just trying to point out that it's in the front of the house.
Right.
And the backyards are looking out.
So my suggestion was you can reduce all this grading, if I can get this thing to work. If you put the units, take those units and push them up the hill, and you actually put the driveway down here, along here, and you push those units back, and you make it, in essence, you put an 8-foot wall inside the unit, and it's not part of the site, and you don't see it. It justifies another unit design. I know developers like to use the same unit over and over and over again, but sometimes a site might dictate a different solution. And then the other thing I'd say about units in general is the footprint. I'm okay with footprints repeating, but I'm a fan of seeing different elevations for each building in different color schemes. So it's not all the same roof material and all the same colors being used over and over and over and over again. Different garage doors, different schemes when you get that far.
He had talked about having three different elevations.
There'd be three elevations of each plan, and there'd be different materials on every elevation. No two houses would ever look alike.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
I know that this is a non-public hearing item. However, if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on the matter, we're happy to hear you.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Kirby Gordon. I represent the owners of the property. As you can see from the old aerial pictures up here, this lot was graded a very long time ago. It's a disturbed site. It was originally zoned for PD because I was working with Beverly Manor, which is a senior housing, big senior housing operator across the United States, and they were looking at two sites, one on Camino Mercado, which is now a condo project up on the top there above the motel, and they were looking at this site. And that's how the PD zoning came about, because in that old PD zoning, which predates, I think, anybody from staff here, but not the commissioners, because I know a lot of the commissioners here have been here a few years. I won't say how many years, but you know, we've all been here a few years, but that PD zoning was there to accommodate the senior housing old component. So we now have a PD zone that doesn't exist anymore, which is kind of unusual. And as was mentioned by staff in 2001, it got a different housing element. But originally that was going to be 90 to 100 bed senior facility, and that's how it got graded off like that. So again, it's again getting back to a question about the environmental. I don't think there is anything left. That was, you know, dirt was piled up there, was put there. It's a disturbed site, and I've walked it many times over the years. And I haven't seen really anything up there. But at the Pismo Clarkia, you know, I know that was a great comment, because there's actually two Clarkias. One's on the endangered list and one isn't, but they look exactly the same. So you never know what you're going to get. But I think that this being a disturbed site, I don't think there's going to be an environmental issue with this parcel. In terms of the density or small lots, I think what the applicant is trying to do is keep the project on that disturbed area. You know, it's possible that you can go into the slopes and make bigger lots. Commissioner Keene, that was one of your comments. And you could do that, and certainly you can end up with larger lots. And I think the applicant, though, in his PUD type of zoning, or a project that he wants. He's going with a bigger open space and a smaller lot size, and not to a city standard in the PD zone. I think you can sandwich those things down. In terms of views, I've looked at this from a number of different points, and I've walked the upper area there, which is the Rancho Grande, and this site is significantly below. I think, Commissioner Payne, if you walked it too today, you'll know that this will not impact anyone's views, especially the ocean views, which are critically important to everybody. I completely understand that, having been in real estate for 40 years. So I don't think that any of the views really on Grace, it will affect that. I think you have to go all the way back to the church site before there's any visual impacts at all. And I don't think the church would object to that. So, again, I think what the applicant's trying to do is stay with the disturbed site, keep more open space, do a PUD, and also, if I may approach the map, Madam Chairperson. Sure. The circulation plan, yes, thank you, Kelly, I appreciate that. The city circulation plan calls for a road right there. You can kind of see it's been drawn in, that there will be a curve there instead of the current stop sign. And so the applicant is going to donate that land to accommodate the city's circulation plan there. And so that, I think, will take some of the pressure off. I mean, the design of that is to take some pressure off of Rodeo, which I think was a comment that you made, Commissioner. So I wanted to bring that up. I think that's a very good design. There's plenty of visual open space there for that Grace Lane to change its current configuration. So I think that's a benefit to the city and fits in with the circulation plan. Certainly, they don't have to then use any condemnation powers to get that. So I think there's a benefit to your circulation plan for doing this.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there another speaker?
John Spencer, 416 Colado Corte. Like Mr. Gordon, I've walked that property for 30 years. We've owned our particular house since 1986, and we are in the Rancho Grande development. And a couple of things that I think needs to be dealt with as this moves forward. I think the commission and the city staff needs to make sure that real extensive notification goes out to the residents of these communities, just not the standard 500 feet or whatever it is on it, because it's going to affect, as Commissioner Fowler Payne said, definitely affect views looking down from the Rancho. You are 100% right on that. I look at that ocean view every night, and so do all of my neighbors. And it will be definitely affected, especially on the plateau that is not a natural plateau, but it has to be dealt with. That is definitely going to be a problem that I know the community will be out in full force on. So I think the applicants need to probably open their visual comments on the different areas in that community, which is definitely multi-leveled and has multi-facets moving forward. And as a lot of other comments that were made up here today, once again, I would ask the question why we have to make such drastic changes to what is previously zoned in our city. We always seem to have the a mentality of trying to just, well, let's just change it. Maybe we should just follow what we have planned and stick with it. But once again, I would like to definitely encourage a very broad information for the people that live in the multiple areas of that particular viewshed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Beatrice Spencer. I live the same place John does. And having looked at this view for the last 26 years, I can tell you that these gentlemen didn't go far enough back up this canyon, because the views, we're not talking about just what overlooks this or what looks at it from a different way. If you go back, there's a view all the way from James Way to this area. So it includes more than what has just been alluded to here tonight. But my question really is with respect to changing the code to allow this high-density housing here. I'm not sure I really understood what staff was. Maybe I could get some clarification. To allow this type of density, I understand it's a fill-in project or an infill project, if I have the terminology correct, but where is the other high density? I don't see it anywhere around me. I walk past this property every day. Where is the high-density housing? We're all single-family residences, and I know back near the church there's something that's like there's maybe six units or something back there. But I don't see anything that's like this on a 4,000-square-foot lot, a four-bedroom or five-bedroom house with a 5- or 10-foot yard setback for a backyard. So if somebody could just tell me where this high-density housing is that I'm not aware of.
Yes, if you can see my cursor right there, that property is owned by the County of San Luis Obispo, and it is zoned multifamily.
Oh, so there's nothing there.
There is nothing. You're right. There's nothing there, there could be something. They've just not shown up with any kind of a plan to date.
Okay. All right, so nothing existing. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to the comment portion of the meeting. So since I forgot you last time, I guess we'll start with Vice Chair Keene.
I pretty much made my comments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Commissioner Mack?
I had a question of staff, and if you don't know the answer, that's fine. At what point does a secondary drive access become a requirement? Is it based on how many units?
It's based on units and distance.
So 12 units, generally 12 or more, you need to start looking at secondary access and then consult with a fire chief regarding design.
So the question I was going, they're putting a lot of extra money into doing the secondary drive access and road improvements, but you know, if they whittled it down to 12 units, for example, they could put a cul-de-sac in and go back out the same way they entered into a city street. That could be a design option.
That would be an option.
The other comment I just wanted to make, just because I worked on a site that was bulldozed over in 1985, 35 acres. And environmental assessment was made, and I ended up with 68 conditions, environmental conditions of new resources and new plant lives and new animals that decided to conquer onto this freshly graded project. So I don't want to see environmental assessments or environmental reports not go forward just because a site's been previously graded. You can create wetlands, you can create environments for plants and animals to go to even after grading. And I believe our engineers, well versed on soils reports, even retire after a year or two and has to be all done, even though the geological makeup of the ground, there's been no change. So I don't want to see that to be overlooked just because it's been graded in the past.
Commissioner Martin, do you have any comments?
No more comments.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
I do. Just refresh my memory on this. When the dirt, when this was already site disturbance, and you're saying that there was the dirt put in there and stored from the rest of the development, what did it? How did it increase the elevation from what the natural elevation would have been?
I'm Commissioner Payne. I'm not trying to say that it increased the natural elevation when that piece of property was originally graded. It was the developer, Mr. Lackey. We used that for as part of some of the excess dirt that we had as a place to put it. And it was also graded, there was a cut there, too, in anticipation of a single facility. And that's how I remember it.
So was the stockpile that was put there from Lackey, was it removed or is it still consistent with what was imported in?
It wasn't a stockpile. It was worked in. It was a proper fill brought in there and some cut back from behind it. So it was built up from the bottom, that 2-to-1 slope. That's not an original slope there. Am I answering where you're going with that? Yeah. Or am I answering your question?
Well, I'm just saying, if you didn't have the fill in there, it would have lowered the elevation of this, and therefore it wouldn't have created that view obstruction. Because I know when you're on a rodeo, you know, it's like a drop-off.
Well, you're talking about a point in time when rodeo was a glimmer in my eye. I mean, you're talking about when it was the original property back in the early 80s, as opposed to at this point in time.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that there was fill brought in here.
That's correct.
And so if that fill wasn't there, it would have dropped the elevation of this enough where it wouldn't be an obstruction in that view corridor.
That's a fair assessment, yes.
So is there no way that you can take it back to the original elevation and take that export back out of there? Or that stockpile dirt that was put there? Because it's already disturbed soil.
I'd have to say, from an engineering point of view, there's no problem with lowering that pad 30 or 40 feet down to the level of Rodeo Drive, and it would take away the view potential, any view potential for those homes.
For the new ones, but it wouldn't obstruct the existing.
And, APCD would probably have a field day with us because we'd be removing 100,000 yards of dirt out of here and having the truck at some place. No, I understand that. But I understand also that site and that terrace has been there since probably about 86 or 87.
So, Commissioner Fowler Payne, we're in the comment portion of our meeting. So
sorry.
That's okay. I appreciate you answering her questions. At this point, I think you can maybe just comment on it and they can make note, and if they need to make any adjustments based on your comments, and that's something that they can look into. Do you have any further comments?
I think it was more of a statement,
right?
Because I knew what was and is.
Yes,
okay.
Right. You're correct.
Thank you so much. So the only comments that I have is I agree with the commissioners that there are too many properties, too many units on the property. However, I understand the need to at times modify our plans to allow for more housing in our area, and that's something that hasn't been addressed tonight. In our general plan, it is one of the things that we look at is how to provide more housing for the people who live in our community so they are not commuting into our community from outside areas. So if there's a way for you to consider compromising and maybe not going all the way up to the 13 units that you had, I believe it's 12 or 13 units, 18, yeah, you know, from 7 to 18, maybe there's a compromise somewhere in there where we can have more housing, but not so many. as far as living conditions for people who buy housing, buy homes in our area. I think owning a home in our area versus not having the option to is something to consider, too. So I'm not opposed to you adding more units, and if we need to modify the general plan in order to do so, that's something for you to consider. However, maybe just change the number of units if that's something that you choose to do. When you do come back, you are very aware that you're going to be hit with a multitude starting in with staff going to ARC, coming here. The view, you know, obstruction to your neighbors is going to be a huge issue. So that's something for you to, you know, like that one public commenter had made, maybe go further back and see from how far back would you be obstructing the view. That's something for you to also consider. So those are my main points. As far as having open space within your development, there's a park around the corner, so I don't really feel like you need to incorporate open space within your development. However, allowing the individual parcels just to be a little larger might accommodate that as well. So those are my comments for you, and hopefully that'll help you move forward. Is that it? All right. Thank you for your time. Okay, so we'll move on to notice of administrative decisions since February 17th. It looks like we had facade modifications at 307 East Branch Street. Did the commissioners have any questions regarding this? No? Okay. So as far as we'll move on to commission communications, did anyone have any commission communications?
No.
I had one. It's a small one. I was on the website today just looking for bylaws and reading the general plan, and I noticed that on our website our new commissioners have not been added to the Planning Commission. So if you could please make that change, that would be great.
And I have a quick comment. Mm-hmm. Under Commissioner Communications, is there anything to report on the ARC meeting yesterday? Anything we should know? Because I know each of us are going to be attending an ARC meeting.
Nothing significant. It was pretty. Yeah, pretty much an ARC meeting.
I'm just thinking this is a good time in the future to discuss that. And in the previous meeting on what projects are going to be coming forward.
Down the pipe. That's a good point. Do we have any staff communications?
None this evening.
I'm ready to hear a motion to adjourn, please.
So moved.
Second.
We are adjourned.